Today we're joined by a very special guest. This is his second time on Rock Feed, one of my favorite rock vocalists ever, Adam Gantier. You know him from Saint Asonia. You know him from his previous band, 3 Days Grace, some of the biggest rock hits of the last 20 years this guy has written. Still turning out bangers, Devastate, Saint Asonia, one of my favorite songs of the year. You're out on the Rock Resurgence Tour?
Resurrection Tour.
Same deal, but these are pulling huge crowds. Arena tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, so first of all, what has that been like for y'all getting out here on the road?
It's been good, man. We did a first leg of this tour, the Rock Resurrection Tour with Theory and Skillet. The first leg was in the spring, and it went really well. So, right. Yeah. So we're, they decided to do a second leg, and here we are.
So I like to take people on these podcasts kind of through their journey in music, their life, their story, and kind of when did you first realize, because you got to know now that you're a very talented singer and songwriter, when did you kind of first realize, like, hey, I want to start writing songs? Like, what made you pick up the guitar? And
you know, my mom was a musician growing up, so, and our music, like, our family is very musical on my mom's side, so we just grew up around music all the time, and she's a piano player and singer. So when I was young, she would go like play gigs at hotel piano bars and stuff, and I'd go. She couldn't afford a babysitter or whatever, so I'd go with her. I'd spend the, you know, pretty late nights kind of just sitting under the piano listening to her play and stuff. So I was influenced pretty early on by that, and then about 12 I got my first guitar, and then about 14 I started to get into like the Seattle music scene. So then I started writing stuff. And
you're not from Seattle.
No.
You're from Toronto?
Yeah, from Peterborough.
Canadian guy?
Yeah.
You're living in the States now?
I am. I still have a place in Canada.
So what was it like growing up, in Canada? Because I have friends in Canada as well. I've been there a few times. And what I gather is I'm like, man, in America, we're really kind of assholes. Like, people in Canada are so nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a bit of a myth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, Canadians are kind of nice.
Yeah.
But Canadians can be
mean too.
Yeah.
So what was the upbringing like in Canada? Like, what did you do for fun? What were your interests other than music? Like, were you into sports or anything? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. In our town, I mean, it's a pretty small town that we grew up in. So yeah, we had, it's either basically sports, go hard at school, and, or, you know, music. So yeah, I did a little bit of music and, well, lots of music, obviously, I guess. And yeah, a bit of sports. But it was a pretty small town, so yeah, there wasn't a lot to do, and there wasn't a lot of fans coming out of Peterborough, Ontario. You know,
at some point, was 3 Days Grace your first band?
No, the band that we started back then in school was called Groundswell, and we were a 5-piece band, and Neil and Brad were both in the band.
Sick,
and then we had two other guitar players, and I just sang. So eventually that band sort of, we lost the two guitar players. One of them ended up going to school full time, and the other one did something else, went out on his own. So then we were a 3-piece, and that's when we decided to change the name, you know, and just kind of revamp the band a bit. And that was the start of 3 Days Grace, and that was probably like 1998 or 97 maybe.
Like, did you guys have, prior to the self-titled album, was there like a demo floating around? Like, what was the first track you guys wrote?
Yeah, we actually did a demo, and I think there was 4 or 5 songs on it, and we actually got Trevor McNeven from Thousand Foot Crutch on the demo.
I didn't know that.
The song called, actually, I forget the title now. There was like 4 songs.
Right.
I forget all the...
It's fine, I get it.
It might have been called In Front of Me or something like that. But yeah. But yeah, we did the demo, and it is floating around. Somebody showed it to me not long ago. Like, it's still out there somewhere.
So like, what was like the first track you guys wrote for that self-titled album, which is just iconic at this point? Do you know?
I don't remember the first track, because I feel like the first song on the album, Burn, I think that might have been one of the first ones that we wrote. Early when we started working with the producer on that record, Gavin Brown, we were all excited about, you know, getting a development deal and working with him. And I remember writing that riff and stuff, just So I think that might have been one of the early ones, but
how did
they
were
all written in the same time period, kind of.
Prior to that self-titled record, like, how did the label take interest? How did you get...
We ended up... basically, we ended up getting a development deal with EMI Publishing in Canada. And up there, that company, they were sort of signing different independent bands to development deals, basically giving them a big chunk of money for some of the publishing and then getting them a record deal after that. So we were rehearsing down the hall from Billy Talent.
Wow.
About the same, so we were friends with those guys, and the same time that we got signed by EMI, they were getting signed by EMI as well. So it was like it all kind of happened at the same time. And so yeah, we just got a development deal with EMI and then made demos, and we shopped those demos to record labels down in the States. It was important for us to get some interest in the U.S. rather than strictly
Canada. It's a bigger market.
It's a way bigger market, and it's tougher to break into, so especially for Canadian bands. We'd grown up listening to so many Canadian bands that were huge in Canada, but made zero waves in the States, and we didn't want that to happen. Right. So yeah, so we signed with Jive Records out of New York City. They were a pop label.
Yeah.
They had Britney Spears.
Yeah, they had Britney. What was that like? Were y'all tripping when like you signed to this major label deal right off the jump? Was that like a head trip?
Yeah, for sure. Because it felt like it happened overnight. But, you know, and just like, yeah. But it was pretty interesting being signed to that label, because we go to New York to, you know, sign the deal, and then we're hanging out we went to like Justin Timberlake's first album release party.
What? Justified?
Justified, yeah.
Dude, are you kidding me?
No, I got to. Yeah. No, that was
that's
pretty cool.
Sick.
Yeah, he was a great dude. I introduced myself to him and talked to him for a minute there, and who else was there?
Was this like Justin with like the curly blonde hair? The ramen noodle hair?
Basically,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Sick.
Yeah.
That's like the golden era, the denim jacket.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah, so the reason we went with Jive, they didn't have any rock bands. They had Bowling for Soup, and they had, I think they had 311.
311 is such a sick band.
Yeah, and maybe Jars of Clay, I think. And Head PE was the other one. So they did,
love
but
Head
they
PE.
Didn't have, like... I don't know.
We just Head PE was signed to Jive.
I think they were, yeah, early on. But yeah, we just figured they were a small label. They were still independent, and
with Britney,
yeah, they were still an independent label at the time.
That's wild.
So yeah, so we just figured they had some money that they'd be willing to spend and all that. So it turned out well for us.
So you go into the studio in this first self-titled album. I'm just obsessed with this record. Some people will say that you had a lifetime to write the first album. So are these songs you had kind of in the can?
Sort of. A lot of the ideas, I think we had a lot of ideas, a lot of the riffs and maybe some of the melodies. Like my lyrics were probably just mumbly, you know, mumbled.
Just getting the melody right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think maybe half of the album we had sort of written beforehand. And then when we went in to record it, we went to Longview Farm Studios in Massachusetts. So it was like a live-in thing. It's like a farmhouse and a barn, and you live in the farmhouse, right, and you record in the barn.
That's sick.
So we had a lot of time to just basically just write whatever we wanted to and record it at the same time.
That seems so expensive too. Like,
yeah,
you're just on, you're basically on like a retreat, just writing songs in a studio.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, it was amazing. It was
that's
a great
so cool
time. And yeah, it's a lot different now.
Yeah,
nowadays, you know.
So you get in the studio, like, what was the first major hit off that record that y'all wrote? What was the,
off the first
recorded? Yeah, what was the first one that you really cut in the studio?
Well, we demoed I Hate Everything About You, and that was the one that got us.
Got the label?
Yeah.
That's just such, the first time I heard that, it sounds so ridiculous to say, but it was on like a NASCAR game.
Yeah.
Somebody's
mentioned that yesterday.
Dude, I played the hell out of that game, and that's right. What burnt, I'm like, who is this band on your OG Xbox? It burned in my brain.
Yeah.
Video, if you're in a band and you can get a song in a video game, it's gotten more important these days.
Yeah.
Like
sure.
Slaughter to Prevail is in the new COD, which is insane,
right,
in their campaign.
Right.
That really stood out to me. I Hate Everything About You. Once you recorded that, did y'all know, well, because the label took interest, did y'all know like this song is about to take off for us? The first time I heard it, I knew it was going to be a hit.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah, when we wrote the riff and then came up with the idea, it was a big moment because we all sort of freaked out. It was like 3 in the morning and trying to come up with the right thing. So yeah, when we came up with it, it was a big moment for sure. And then we just demoed it and got a bunch of traction from labels. They loved it. So yeah,
that's a huge fan.
I don't think we ever really knew that it would be sort of as big as it was. We just thought it was the song that was going to do okay to get us a deal. And then
right. So once the album, once the song came out, was released as a single, I think I Hate Everything About You was the lead single, mm-hmm. which how could it not be?
Mm-hmm.
How soon was it before you were like, damn, this is taking off. This is starting to pop for us.
Yeah, we went on tour with, our first tour was with Trapped and Smile Empty Soul.
Sweet.
And,
Smile Empty Soul rules, dude. I love them.
Yeah, they're great.
I just saw them. I just saw them recently. They still sound great.
Yeah, Sean is a great dude. I always loved that band.
He has such a great voice.
Yeah, amazing. Our first tour in the States was with them, was Trapped and Smile Empty Soul. And, I think it was like halfway through that tour where we were, the single was doing well, and we could tell the crowds were getting bigger and they were singing the song back and stuff like that.
That's so sick.
Yeah, it was like about halfway through that tour, everything started to, take off. Yeah.
Who were some of the people you've gotten to meet over the course of your career, other than JT, Justin Timberlake, which is massive? Mm-hmm. Who were some of the people that you've met that you're like, that is sick?
I met Mike McCready at a festival, and that was awesome for me. That was, that was amazing.
Right.
I was hoping to meet Eddie, but he wasn't there.
Right.
He wasn't
around.
Yeah, but I was still super stoked. Man, I've met a few. It's hard because over 20 years of...
Now you've met probably everyone.
Kind of just meet people randomly, and my memory is pretty kind of shot from the early years of touring. We met Gene Simmons in Australia. We were on tour with Nickelback and met Gene Simmons. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive guy or anything, but...
I think they put on a good show, but it wasn't my era.
No, me neither.
Yeah.
Me neither. It wasn't my thing. Like playing shows with, we did, festivals with Alice in Chains. I mean, touring with Velvet Revolver and STP.
Oh, wow.
That was probably...
Slash.
That was huge. Yeah, that was really big for me. We toured Canada with Velvet Revolver, so...
Velvet Revolver, too, that has held up. Those songs with Velvet Revolver have
absolutely
really held up.
Yeah. The songs from that first album they put out, like Slither.
Yeah, immediately, right off the jump were hits. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of crazy because not every super group is going to pop like that, where you go you can put Slash, Slash as a solo band that wasn't as big as, it still is a very good solo band, but it wasn't as big as that. But the second album comes out, how long was it? It was 1X, right? It was the second album. So that comes out also loaded with hits. Did you, and not everybody can deliver on that second album.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard thing to do.
For sure. Yeah.
You have all this pressure on your back. Mm-hmm. What was that process like going into the second album? Cause now you do have stuff riding on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was the beginning of that, making that record was, making 1X was pretty, difficult. We had some songs, kind of half written, that sort of thing. We had ideas. So we started working with one producer in LA in, I think it was Sunset Sound or Sunset, I forget what it was, but we started working it. It wasn't working out with the producer, so we made a change, and that was we weren't getting anywhere in the first few weeks of trying.
What do you look for when you see a producer and it's like it's not working out? Like, what does that look like for you? You're just like...
Well, we just weren't gelling, he was on a different page than we were, I guess. And like you said, that second album's really, really important. And there was no room for...
It takes guts to do that.
Yeah. It was just no room for any, it had to be, so we were all in different kind of headspaces and that sort of thing. So, we ended up working with Howard Benson. So we switched from who we were with.
Howard's a hit maker.
And at the time, and he is still, but so we went with Howard, and that was
the right call.
Yeah,
that was the, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, the catalyst that we ended up going into a pre-production rehearsal hall in LA and just worked on everything and got it all together, and that was it. Went into Howard's studio, and
he did huge records.
He did a lot of big records. He did I think he did that first Kelly Clarkson record.
Oh wow.
And then Daughtry and My Chemical.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's crazy.
All American Rejects. I mean, he did a whole
That's crazy.
Whole wagon. Then.
I mean, I remember at that point, you guys were up there. It was y'all. It was Nickelback. Mm-hmm. It was just people, just these bands in the early 2000s, just Papa Roach, yeah. Grand Slam home runs mm-hmm. left and right.
Yeah.
You don't really see that level of, like, you still have bands that are popping now where you have, like, Falling in Reverse, you have Sleep Token, you have all these other bands. But, like, at that time, it was like there was something in the water, man, mm-hmm. where everybody was dropping nuclear hits. Mm-hmm. Along with that, you know, you say you don't remember a lot from those early days. Where y'all, yeah. did the fame affect y'all? Were y'all, like, partying too hard? And...
For sure. I mean, I was, yeah. yeah. I was definitely, yeah. I even before we got signed, I was already on a sort of a, we got signed, lots of money and this and that. And then it was, like, I was fully. So, yeah, my memory's not great, but there's certain things.
Was it alcohol you were just drinking a lot? And
it was pills.
Pills.
And, yeah, not really alcohol. It was more pills than anything, wow. yeah.
Was there a point for you where you're like, damn, I'm partying too hard, like, mm-hmm. and I need to, like, because yeah. I know you ended up leaving the band, now everything's all good, mm-hmm. and I want to talk about that too, but, like, what, was there a point for you where you're like, fuck, I'm partying too hard and I need to stop?
Well, there was between the first record and 1X, so shortly before we had to start the process for 1X, I went into treatment in Toronto. And yeah, but I got out of that and then got back on the road and was sober for a while. And then,
it's so hard.
So it is tough. It is tough. I think what really worked for me back then was I hired a sober coach, like a sobriety companion, I guess, that came out on the road, lived with us on the bus. And like,
sounds that expensive.
Yeah. But at the time, again, because the industry was so, like, the budgets for
right
were just
crazy. You
know, yeah, so we were able to
$30 CDs.
Yeah. So that really helped for the, you know, and then later in the process, addiction is pretty tough. It's a it's a constant sort of battle, you know.
Totally.
And back then I didn't really have, you know, I have kids now.
Yep.
So that's a huge, it's the biggest motivator for me. Don't want them ever to see me like that, you know. So yeah, there's no going back,
right?
Because I'm not the most important thing in my life, you know.
Right, I respect that, man. Yeah. I got to tell you, you have been, and it's been so cool. One of my favorite. I'm jumping around in the timeline here, but that's okay because I want to get to this because I don't want to forget. I thought it was so cool that you went to that recovery center recently. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that and kind of like what it means to you? Because now you're at a point where you're able to give back to people, mm-hmm. and you're still on the road. Mm-hmm. You're still facing the same temptations. Mm-hmm. But now you're able to actually counsel other people or speak to them or whatever. What was that experience like for you?
It's great. I used to do it when we traveled back in the early 2000s. When I was sober, I would do that. I would go to some different treatment centers and just drop in and talk to people and visit and hang out. And I hadn't done it in years. So,
right.
Yeah, I just, we were in Utah, basically outside of Salt Lake City, and went to Cirque Lodge, and those, you know, they're in their early recovery, most of them, and it's not fun. It's really difficult, you know, especially if they're like a week in and going through some really tough withdrawals and that sort of thing. So I think it just did a little bit of a positive thing, you know, yeah. to have somebody come through and hang out and play a couple times, you know.
I think it's very positive because they also can look at you and go, like, you know, I always see people out on the road away from home and stuff, and I feel empathy for them as well, because it's like, here we are, we're filming this on the week of Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and while you are a rock star and while you are about to play at arena mm-hmm. here shortly, you know, being away from family is not fun, and that's
yeah.
tough. And
yeah,
it is. Every musician I have spoken to, you know, as you've seen, is the will express that sentiment, mm-hmm. is that it's a sweet gig, mm-hmm. but it is also not glamorous.
No. Yeah, I don't know. As you can see, I should have shut the door to the bunk alley. That would be messy. But yeah, no, it's not glamorous at all. And yeah, it being away from home is tough, for
right.
sure. It's part of the deal, though. You're kind of used to it. But
right.
again, I have pretty young kids, so I'm still getting used to that, being away from them.
At least now you have, like, FaceTime.
Yeah,
at least FaceTime is sick.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's a huge yeah,
but yeah. it's no consolation. But you know,
it makes things easier for sure.
The bands you're touring with, at least on this tour, from what I've seen, you know, they are all so chill. It seems like it's one big family.
Oh yeah,
you know?
It's great. We've all known each other for for ages. And it's a one big happy family.
Like, I feel like, sure, I don't even know Skillet that well, but when I'm around them, I feel like I'm their family. Like,
yeah,
just make you feel that welcoming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know? They have a way of making you feel welcome. Yeah.
You get to a point, you end up leaving the band, you end up departing. What was that experience like for you? That had to have been a difficult challenge to say, you know, I'm departing this band that I've been a big part of.
And... Yeah, it was a tough decision. I wasn't in a good headspace. I had been using, and I don't think I was using at the exact time that I left, but just things were, as even aside from addiction and stuff, my home life was all messed up. Things were just like the whole thing was, I had to shut something down. I had to stop something because I was just in a pretty bad place.
Right.
And for me, the decision was, I need to like go home and just stop everything, because it just felt like a big machine rolling. I was like just caught underneath it, you know? It was a tough decision, and I probably could have handled it differently the way that I left and that sort of thing. Like, I, you know, it wasn't like a sit down and talk about it kind of thing. It was like, I'm gone, and I just left. So, you know, but, you live and learn.
I was in a bad spot.
It's no real excuse, but I was in a bad spot, and I think they continued on pretty strong. So.
They've been killing it.
Yeah.
But also for you, I know this for sure, is that there is a massive group of people that want Adam to play with 3 Days Grace.
Yeah.
Are you feeling that love from the fans?
Yeah, for sure.
Huge it is every time you get up there with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's pretty awesome. And we're we don't have anything planned, but
sure.
I think eventually, you know, something might come from that. We'll see.
Well, from what I see from them, it seems like y'all are in a really good place, yeah. And it seems like they really love you, and they know the fans love you, mm-hmm. And you know, it's just been, I gotta tell you, those are some of my favorite moments from this year, is seeing you get back up there and play with them.
Right.
I had people blowing up my phone sending me clips. Oh shit, Adam's playing with 3 Days Grace, because I think it was at Bridgestone.
Yeah,
and I know a lot of people in Nashville.
It was at the auditorium.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was Nashville. It was there in Nashville, and I was just like, damn. Mm-hmm. That is crazy. Does that stress you out? Like going back out there with the band you used to play with? Like, do you get nervous?
No. I mean, I was maybe a little nervous, I don't think it was. Yeah. I mean, it was different for sure. The first time we did it was in Huntsville, Alabama, close to.
There were people like crying in the stage,
in the
crowd.
It was pretty intense, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that is so cool.
I don't know. It was a lot of fun. I think we'll talk about trying to make something happen, because we had the amount of success and the amount of good that we did together. It's hard to just kind of push that aside.
No, but that was been really cool. Y'all got an award together at at your old high school.
Yeah.
Did y'all go to high school together?
Yeah, we did.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Brad and myself and Neil and Matt.
That's gonna mean a lot.
Yeah, for sure, man. It was a small town, Norwood High School, about 1,500 people in the town. So it's a small place. And just recently, they gave us the Hall of Fame, inducted us into their Hall of Fame.
So you really grew up in a 1,500 approximately town. That's a different upbringing than like even when I had. So you're like, were you out in the woods, like dirt biking and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So you're like a Canadian redneck.
Uh-huh.
Totally. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, like, so there's Toronto, and then 2 hours away from Toronto is Peterborough, and that Peterborough is a town of about 65,000 people.
Wow.
And then half an hour away from that is Norwood, and that's 1,500 people. So I was born in Peterborough, lived in Toronto for a bit with my parents when I was super young. They divorced, and then I ended up in Norwood. So it was kind of like between Norwood, Peterborough, and Toronto was kind of what, but yeah, high school years were in Norwood, so.
Is it tough having parents splitting when you're a kid growing up? Is that a...
Yeah, for me, they weren't getting along, and I could tell. I was about 10, I think, when they split. So they weren't getting along, and I could tell. And when my dad sat me down to tell me that they were, kind of made sense to me. I didn't really take it too hard because I knew something was off, right? So whatever was going to make both of them happy was, it was pretty important.
That's a very mature response from a young person.
Yeah. Growing up, it was looked after some of the, trying to caretake a little
bit. That's important.
Yeah.
So now you're also, I guess you're in Nashville as well.
Yeah.
Are you riding with a lot of people out there?
Yeah.
That's so sick, dude.
With a lot of people.
You in Nashville makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you could write country hits too.
I could try.
I feel like you could.
I could give it a go. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I've been riding with the Four Horsemen guys like Blair Daly and Zach Malloy, Tyler Stevens, those guys. And then Keith Wallen is
there. Shout out Keith. Breaking Benjamin.
Yeah. And yeah, a bunch of people. Actually, Keith wrote Devastate.
That dude's got, he's got the magic pen for sure right now. He's writing some bangers because Devastate is a heater, dude.
Right.
I love it.
You covered it.
I love it. Yeah, I did. I thought it was so sick. I was just like, that's an infectious, like, you know, your voice on that track, it like takes me back to early Three Days Grace era as well. And Saint Asonia, all of that stuff, the cover you did of The Weeknd. I mean, for anyone who is not familiar with Saint Asonia, like if you're missing that Adam Marker voice right there, like there are banger hooks that y'all have.
There's something in there.
You know, and the fans, I think it's really starting to, I've noticed a lot more people talking about Saint Asonia lately. You know,
yeah.
It seems like it's really starting to click with people.
For sure, man. I feel like it's building a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, being on this tour is huge for us.
Right.
Going out on tour.
Do you play any of the old Three Days Grace stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, so people really know what's
about
up.
About halfway through the set, the crowd warms up.
You break out those.
Start at 7 p.m. and everybody's like, what is this? You know, it takes a minute.
But we're going to be in the pit. We're going to...
I'll see you.
We're going to be out there starting trouble.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, now, who are some of the bands? Because I know it's not just me that loves you. A lot of musicians love you. The fans of Rockfeed love you. You know, who are some of the bands that you look at right now that you, I know you pay attention to this stuff that you think, man, they're really hitting. I love what they're doing. Like, who are the bands, you know, in the last 5 years or so that you're looking at that you're like, that's a sick band?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I do like, obviously, I like what Sleep Token's doing. I mean, they're
killing it.
I love what Spiritbox is doing, you know, and they're fellow Canadians as well. So I'm like extra rooting for Spirit Box. Bad Omens is killing it. They've been around for a while, you know. There's so much good stuff. It's tough to sort of nail it down because, you know, I'll listen to Octane or listen to the local radio and it's pumping out a bunch of stuff that kind of sounds similar. Then there's a few that stand out.
It seems like we're starting to get into an era of like where stuff's starting to really happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Where, for one, I mean, people go, there was a time where people were like, there aren't big bands breaking anymore. Mm-hmm. But Ghost counts towards that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to look at Ghost and go, you know, Ghost has become huge.
That's another band that
they've become massive.
Yep.
And that's a band that, you know, I interviewed Tobias back when he was a nameless ghoul a couple of times when they were first starting out. He sort of went from this real kind of inaccessible sound, I think, mm-hmm. to now it's like pop metal. I don't really even know what you would call it. It's catchy.
It's their own thing.
Yeah.
It's his own thing. There's nobody like it.
Yeah.
I mean, Avatar might be kind of close to that.
Yeah. Avatar, and then you have, you know, with Sleep Token as well, they're, I guess I would call it theatrical.
Yeah.
You know, and similar to Ghost.
That guy could sing, though, man.
God, he can.
Voice, man.
He can sing and he can write, and their drummer. The whole band is, we've seen, have you seen them live yet?
No, I haven't seen them.
They're actually really sick.
Oh,
I should say. We've seen them a couple times. It's just insane. We saw them opening for Nothing More. You know, do you do like warm-ups and stuff? Because your voice, every time I see you, always sounds great.
No, thanks, man.
Yeah.
No, I was just talking about this with somebody. I've been really fortunate over 20 years of playing. I haven't had anything, so I'm lucky.
Have you ever had your...
I warm up a little bit before shows.
You do.
I try not to go too hard. Like, we'll just sing. I'll just crank music in the dressing room, and I'll just sing along with stuff for a few minutes. And that's pretty much it. I have a vaporizer, like an inhaler that's just a steam inhaler that gets the voice chords, like, warm. And So yeah, but that's about it.
What do you do outside of music for fun? What's fun for you? What do you like to do? I like watch UFC. I play Xbox.
Yeah.
I go to the gym.
Yeah. Most of the time that I have when I'm not making music is at home and usually involves a six-year-old, a two-year-old.
Sure.
So, you know, watching movies and stuff with the kids is...
You know all the words to Frozen and stuff.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, for sure. That I can sing. Yeah, I can sing it. He's singing like any random kid songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what's the thing on YouTube? Coco Melon?
Of course.
Wow.
Of course. Usually we'll play sports and stuff at home, like play soccer or baseball or something with the little guy. Or that's something that we do on the road where if we have time to kill and we're, you know, bored or whatever. We've got a football. We've got
team. Are you a football fan?
Gloves and sort of nut. I'm slowly becoming. I lived in Minnesota for a long time,
and I got
into the Vikings. So, yeah, I find myself kind of rooting for them.
It seems like a random place to live.
My wife.
Okay.
My wife is from Minnesota. She was born and raised there and stuff, and so I moved from Toronto to Minnesota.
Nice.
In late 2014.
Well, that's a good reason to move there.
Yeah, it was a great reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have that talk, that Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you ever pick up on it when you lived there?
Well, it's very Canadian. It's very similar. So, yeah, they just fit right in.
You don't have much of a Canadian accent, though. Like,
not anymore. No, over the years, it's kind of, what I find when I go back, my wife says when we go back to Canada over Christmas or over the summer or something, we cross the border and back to like,
hey, buddy.
It's a beauty day, yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. I don't even notice it. But we as a band, we're always the Canadian accent on this bus is insane.
Like, is it?
But we do it purposely though. It's like it's pretty intense.
Any of the other guys in the band Canadian, or is it just you?
Yeah, they all are.
Oh, they all are.
They're all Canadian. Like Kale is my cousin. He's
right
on bass.
Right.
We grew up together.
Shout out Kale.
Cody's from Peterborough as well, and Tavis is also from, Mike is not, but right. Tavis is filling in for Mike right now.
Mike's from Boston,
yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so the four of us are originally Canadian. Tavis lives in Vegas now, I'm in Nashville, and Kaylee and Cody are both in Canada.
I talked to Mike, love Mike, he loves you, he said that in the podcast. One thing that he said that it was so true is he was like, after Stained, I have Aaron Lewis. And then I'm like, yeah, then you went and got Adam. Like, you've only had heater vocalists, dude. He's like, yeah. He's like, I've really lucked out.
All right. Aaron's,
his voice is insane.
Yeah, another planet, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, his voice is ridiculous.
And I saw them this summer, and he still just is cat. The thing about him is he'll just be on stage, like, smoking cigarettes. Yeah. He gives no fucks, and he's just belting these songs. Like, it's problem.
I watch it, I'm like, how, you know, like I used to smoke too when we first started. I used to smoke pretty often,
yeah.
But I mean, he's got some whiskey, he's got a
yeah, gel, dude,
he's got a smoke, he's like constantly going.
He went through a pack during our podcast. The podcast went crazy, people loved it,
yeah.
And he was so cool on the podcast. But he was sitting there smoking like a champ. I was about to take one, I don't even smoke. I was like, let me have one just for this. This is an iconic experience,
yeah, right? Yeah, no, but shortly after I left 3 days, Mike hit me up, and he was working on a record. He was going to have some guest singers. He was going to do a solo record, basically, Mike Mushad with some guest singers. He asked me if I'd be into that. And I said, sure, of course. We'd known each other for a while, played a lot of shows with Stained. And yeah, we got together to do some writing, and it just went really well. We just gelled, you know, music-wise, we gelled really well. So we ended up writing, like, I don't know, 5 tunes or something over 2 days. And from there, we were just like, let's write some more and make a record.
What's interesting about you too is that you are able to tour even by yourself. Like there's videos of you in Europe where you'll just go and play acoustic and people are screaming the words.
Yeah.
Still to this day. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy. Does that trip you out?
For sure, man.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Yeah. Been to Russia a few times.
Yeah. They love 3 Days Grace over there in Russia.
They love it, yeah. And the first time I went over, we hadn't gone, at least as, like, we had never gone over there when I was in 3 Days
Grace.
So, yeah, it was pretty interesting to go over there, and crowds are pretty intense.
I want to say this, too. What I love about y'all is that y'all do covers, too, mm-hmm. and you've done a couple of them. The Weeknd. I think there was one other, but
the other cover we did was I Don't Care Anymore by Phil Collins.
Oh, that's so sick, dude. And are you a Genesis guy?
I'm more of a Phil Collins guy, but yeah, of course. I mean, I still love Genesis, yeah.
God, he is a hit maker.
Yeah, like those songs, that song is just, there's something about Phil Collins, the way, like his songs, they have like a sort of an eerie-ish vibe to them, and you can really, you know, you can really heavy those up. Although we didn't heavy it up too much, but yeah, and with The Weeknd, it's just, I'm always listening for like, obviously the melody and the chord progression stuff, and if that would sound good.
Right.
You know, and The Weeknd, I wanted to cover a Weeknd song, just something that people wouldn't necessarily expect.
It's a banger. I was listening to that yesterday.
Yeah, so we went back and forth with which one of his to cover, and that felt like the one.
If you in 2023 had no connections, had no nothing, you've written some songs that you think are pretty good, you've got quality, but like, what's the advice you would give? What are the first like couple of things you would do if you were starting out a band and you were really trying to do it professionally? For anyone listening, I have a lot of people that like have these dreams, mm-hmm. want to do it, and I don't think we have enough people starting bands these days.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. It's a tough one because it's changed so much from when we got signed and all that stuff. So I think what I would do, and I can only speak from how my experience and what happened. And we basically early on we had a lawyer that took our music that we thought was good, and they basically sent an entertainment lawyer that went to the labels with the music, so right. that your stuff wasn't getting, you know, unsolicited. So it wasn't unsolicited, right? So yeah, I think what I would probably do if I were looking to get a record deal and get things going, I'd probably try to find an entertainment lawyer, and you know, finish obviously making the best songs I can, and
right.
get them to a lawyer that could shop them to different labels and see if I got a response.
And there's a lot of people that are like, oh, well, I don't want to focus on the business, but you have to if you're trying to do
I mean, it depends on what you're into it for as
right.
well, right? There is a fine line there between just kind of doing what you love to do and not, you know, not really worry about it and just do it. And that attracts people as well. So,
right.
Yeah. It's quite the business, man. It's interesting.
What would you say is one of your most favorite moments throughout your whole career? What's something that you look back on, you go, that was so cool? I'm so proud of that.
I think a big one was we played a big festival in Brazil many years ago, and we haven't been there since. But it was our first international festival. We were the only international band. It was in Brazil at the Rock in Rio site. There was about 35,000 people.
Wow.
And we were like a featured sort of international band. And that was just insane because it was the first big festival that we'd ever done. And it was like mind-blowing. And then there's been a lot of really cool moments. We opened for the Stones in Canada.
What?
Yeah, two nights.
I didn't know that. You opened for the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, that was pretty
Even
insane.
Like Metallica is like fanboy about the Rolling Stones. They're as big as it gets.
Yeah, yeah. We lucked out. We were pretty big.
Did you get to meet them?
Yeah, we did.
So you got your picture taken with them and everything?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, well, that was a big moment for sure.
Adam, you know, I want to thank you for doing this once again. This is going to be a killer episode. This has been so awesome and so many great stories. And so Saint Asonia, we got you linked in the description there. I highly recommend you go follow them on Spotify. Take a quick second. It's never been more easy to access this music. Any plans for next year? Y'all have any tours coming up or anything that might be announced in the future?
Yeah, we have a February-March tour that's going to be announced here within a few days,
I think. Heck yeah, dude.
So it's a co-headline with somebody else.
Love it.
In April, we're going out with Stain and Seether.
That's such a sick lineup, dude.
It's in Montana.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a lot of fun.
So you'll be touring with, what's his name as well, Mike, on that tour, too. That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's I'm so glad Stain is back.
Dude. Yeah, me too.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, but probably some new music as well. We're working on some new stuff. And
good.
I think we're going to get a couple
of songs. Oh, and The Wolf with John Cooper is out now, right? I love that. It's a banger.
Just dropped it a couple days ago,
So a lot of exciting things on the horizon for Saint Asonia. That's a big tour with Stain next year. Looking forward to all of that. Adam, thank you for doing this, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you.